This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Boarding the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Home.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard, and it is Wednesday, June 12th, 2024. The U.S. men's national team just drew Brazil 1-1, so things are maybe going to be okay after all for Berhalter and Copa America. Maybe, probably not. I'm numb to it at this point. Moise Bombito has now gotten a result against Messi and Mbappe, and Miles Robinson can't say that. And Diego Rubio is counting down the days till his revenge tour and his return to Commerce City, Colorado. I'm joined now by a man who's wearing a pair of nasty skivvies and he could use some brass knuckles, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Okay, I don't get that reference. Explain, Matt.
Band of Brothers, Mark, they're packing to get ready for D-Day or whatever, and Joe Toy is ranting off like, oh, it's packed, I got my shoot, my reserve shoot, candy, chocolate bars, 3 days rations,
nice.
K-rations, frack grenades, mining grenades, entrenching tool, and a pair of nasty skivvies. And then I probably Percotti or Lutz, one of the comedic relief members of Easy Company, says, what about your brass knuckles? And Joe Toy says, I could use some brass knuckles.
God, good memory. Wow, you're so good at this.
I did catch up on Wrexham and completely rewatch Band of Brothers this weekend, Mark. Listeners, this is what I do when there is no Rapids game. I needed help this weekend.
I watched episode 6 of Wrexham and cried, which is funny because I cried at episode 5 and I cried at episode 4. So either I'm having serious emotional regularity problems or Wrexham is really, really emo, and I'm so there for it, which is great.
They've hit on the mental health stuff. Really, really good, Mark. The
that was
one
like
on
four.
the photographer and his situation and being around the club.
Cool.
Really, really good as well. And then, Rabbi, we have to talk about this because there is that one scene. I think it's in one of the earlier episodes, one of the first three. They're talking about doing the temporary cop stand, and Humphrey is giving Robin Ryan the bad news about that. And they cut and they start playing Hello Darkness, My Old Friend by Garfunkel.
Yes,
and
very
so
good.
I think we need to Just like how Judgmental Jim will be suing RSL for ripping off his Nuff Said, I think we need to straight up, we need to, what your Mark, we both have to know a good lawyer in Los Angeles County. We need them to show up to Rob's house and then and like serve him. We're taking him to soccer court. They stole our meme, Mark. They stole our meme.
It's true. It was a great episode, though, still. And the fact that they threw up a temporary stand. I love the fact that they're like, this is going to lose us money. This is a bad idea. And Rob and Ryan are like, well, we have to do it. And that's what we're doing. And that's that. It's great.
It must be nice to have owners that put the fans over their own personal checkbooks. I wonder what that feels like emotionally.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. No, I mean, what's it like to have owners who have attended a game for that matter? Owners who are aware they own a professional soccer team. I mean, sorry, two professional soccer teams in the case of our owners.
Yeah, and they're across.
I think they know they own Arsenal. So.
Yes, and also on top of that, like Mark, imagine if like this isn't like imagine if Wrexham was like in the United States and Robin like in Chicago, or like imagine Robin Ryan owned Chicago Fire, and then they also owned the Cubs and the Blackhawks, and then like still never came to games. But yeah. That'd be a good stat. How many games? What percentage of games have Rob and Ryan been to since they bought the club? It's
not
a
lot. I mean, it's
they're both have to be double digit caps at the Stoke Kyrass.
Oh, for sure. But they've gone to less than a quarter of the matches because they don't live in the same country. So yeah.
Okay, that's better than Josh and Stan. Mark, let's talk about this national team stuff.
Stan's been to one game in my entire time following the Rapids, which is 9 years.
And wasn't it the friendly against Arsenal?
No, that's two. If you count that one, too, that's two. I think he was, if I'm not mistaken, he was at a playoff game.
Was he at the conference final, second leg, against Seattle? I feel like if he was at Thanksgiving, I would have remembered people talking about seeing him at Thanksgiving.
So maybe I'm thinking about Josh, but I think Josh was at that game, but I think Stan has only been to the Arsenal friendly. I think you're right. And that's in my... Now, famously, to be fair to Stan Kroenke, he was at MLS Cup, or was he at the Eastern Conference Finals when the Rapids won the Eastern Conference Finals?
He was definitely at MLS Cup, Mark, because I've interviewed Pablo Mastroianni and asked him how many times he met Stan, and it was at the trophy celebration after winning the cup, and then when they went to the White House with the cup the following year when they had a road game at DC United.
I wish Richard Terry was around. We could ask him. I'll ask him. I think Richard Terry knew this, but I think Stan. So that's actually a really interesting question, which is like, does it count for Stan to have attended a Rapids game if it was a Rapids away game because MLS Cup in 2010 was held in Toronto? So has he been to the Dick? Yes, he's been once to see Arsenal play.
Okay, so fans who
maybe
precede,
he's been twice. He probably was there when the stadium opened in 2007.
Yeah, Highliners. For those of you who precede me and Mark, so we're going back 2013 or before. Feel free to tweet at us, email at us your encyclopedic memory of times in which you have seen Josh or Stan Kroenke IRL at the Richard. Mark, let's talk about this national team. It's been a while. The Colombia game happened. The U.S. was bad. They made a bunch of individual mistakes. They conceded a bunch of goals. And typically, the rational space that is USMNT Twitter and punditry immediately called for the abolition of the program and for Greg Berhalter to be crucified and for all the players to be abolished and everything. And, you know, I'm sure Alexi Lawless has said, get off my lawn, you underperforming tattooed millionaires 100 times since that happened. Ooh, and they came out,
nice
Mark,
reference.
And they played Brazil, and they got a 1-1 draw, and there was a goal off of a set piece by Christian Pulisic that was well taken, and Matt Turner stood on his head on the balance of play and the underlying numbers and the analytics. You would probably say that Brazil was very clearly the better of the two teams, but Zach Steffen did not make a save against Brazil tonight because he did not play. Matt Turner made some staves, and Gio Reyna, I thought, looked better, Mark, and he and Balogun both had great opportunities in that final 20 minutes where both teams were really going for it. But I think the key thing for me is that it was an improved performance. It was definitely a response to what happened in the Columbia game. Does this really change how I feel about Copa America? I mean, not really. I think other than that Uruguay game, I think it's a favorable draw for the U.S. to get out of the group. And they're probably not going to win that group because Uruguay could very well be a favorite, given that Argentina is older. And, you know, Brazil won Neymar hamstring, or maybe Vinicius will carry them this summer. But so, Mark, the underlying concerns are still present around the U.S. men's national team, doubts are present about Greg Berhalter. And fundamentally, Mark, I think, unfortunately, this window was a reaffirmation of the thing that I have felt for years, which is that USMNT fans like the idea of the national team or the idea of its potential. And really, a lot of the hype is around where these players are in terms of their club situations and being at a higher level, not necessarily being a more cohesive team, a team that would die for opportunities in the World Cup like previous generations would have. And fundamentally, I still don't think we're at a talent deficit against these best teams in the world that we'd play in Argentina, in Uruguay, a Brazil, in a Copa America. Certainly, if we get to a quarter or a semifinal in 2 years at the World Cup. And one thing that my dad actually brought up to me, Mark, that I didn't realize when me and my brother and my dad were FaceTiming after the Colombia game, which is that my dad remembers, you know, that 2002 game, Mark, that everyone wants to remember that the U.S. finally won a knockout game was against a Mexico team. So the presumption of, oh, we've gotten out of the group and we've won a knockout game before, we should be able to do it again. The reality is we don't have – you'd have to go back to the 1930 World Cup, Mark, where we finished third. I don't know why we don't brag about that more in order to have – any sense that we are good against the top teams or against the traditional blue bloods when it comes to international competition. And maybe, Mark, we're just like the Netherlands minus in CONCACAF and like should accept that until there's somebody better than Pulisic or Reyna on the team. Mark, you did not watch.
Yeah, I was going to say, go ahead.
You did not watch the game. What questions do you have for me? What thoughts do you have based on my analyses?
Well, so the U.S. scored first. How did they play after that? And did you think it was the right tactic from Triple G, Greg Berhalter?
I thought the defensive structure was a little bit better. There was still very much some fire drill moments. Chris Richards had a moment where VAR got involved and I think got the call right. It would have been a dangerous free kick for Brazil. But I mean, yeah, look, they shrunk a little bit after that, or they anticipated that Brazil was going to put on the pressure. And then they played a little bit small, a little bit conservative to try and protect that lead. They weren't able to protect the lead. I guess they, to the extent that a draw is a metaphorical point in a friendly, they got a result, quote unquote. But yeah, it went about as what I expected. And we still see that against some of these top teams, Greg Berhalter can be pragmatic at times, or when the team is under a lot of pressure, either psychologically or from what the opponent's doing or expectations or based on the scoreline, that still they don't necessarily react in that same way. It was a little bit more frantic and reactionary, similar to what we saw in the Netherlands after that first goal, or certainly maybe a little bit against Iran if we're talking about 2022, but less so. You know, the last time, Mark, the only times that I can think of in Greg Berhalter's era in which we've really gone at teams that I think are at talent level with us are the England 0-0 in Qatar, and then, you know, times playing against Mexico. But I think with hindsight, we can clearly say Mexico's on the down and the U.S. is on the up. So these finals where we've battered them or been the protagonist, I think increasingly are less impressive in that regard.
Gotcha. Were there any players who, other than Matt Turner, who you said stood on his head, stood out to you as above average or remarkable?
I liked what I saw from Tyler Adams. How much of that is, you know, the absence, you know, makes my heart grow fonder for him being back on the field. And I thought Gio Reyna continues to do really, really good stuff, Mark. Say what you will about Greg Berhalter. Say what you will about the whatever relationship that the Berhalters collectively have with the Reyna family and everything, Gio and Greg, from a professional, like they know each other at work standpoint, appear to be at least cordial or at least accepting of the circumstances and everything. And I think for the most part, Greg has given Gio opportunities based on merit. And for the most part, Gio's done a good job with that opportunities. You know, that point blank chance that he had with the Brazilian keeper right at the end was maybe going to be a tough finish given the angle and everything. But I mean, other than that, I thought Gio tried to be saucy. He tried to bring something to the game. He had a few hard tackles on him, which I didn't care for the way it was officiated, but it's Brazil. What are you going to do?
Nice. And did you think Brazil, how do you think Brazil will be talked about tomorrow? Do you think people will say, in Brazil especially, do you think people will say, like, they lost to the, or they drew the Americans, how shameful? Or do you think it'll be like, yeah, well, you know, what are you going to do? Or more like, it's a warm-up game. It doesn't count. Like,
I don't have a good sense of, Mark, how the, like, Brazilian media and fan punditry, like, reacts to these sorts of games, especially when it's a friendly. I think on the merits, they would say Brazil should have won the game. Vinicius should have had another goal in this one as well. You know, Neymar was floppy in the way that he is, and that's something that if I was a Brazil fan would continue to drive me crazy. I think Brazil's looking at this and thinking that this is absolutely a competition that we should win, and this is certainly one, given that Argentina, you know, it's Messi and a bunch of guys. It's some kids who weren't a part of 2022. And then it's a bunch of guys who are 2 years older than they were in 2022. We should expect to go to the final, and we should expect to be, we want to beat Argentina. And I think the only team in which you would argue it would be acceptable for a fully healthy Brazil team at all to lose in Copa America this summer would maybe be Uruguay, because I think Uruguay is a little bit on the up, but based on the history of what you would have, Brazil wants to win. Anything less than winning is going to be a failure, just like basically every major tournament they've been in since the last time they won the World Cup. Okay, Mark, let's talk about some of the summer stuff going on. It's been a couple weeks now, and we are now into what we've got, I think, 3 weeks left officially, Mark, in, or less than that, 2.5 maybe, in Rafael Navajo's loan with Colorado Rapids, and we're coming up on what, 6 weeks left in Lamine Diok's training stint with the Colorado Rapids at this point. I should point out, listeners, if you're listening to us on Thursday, June 13th, either coming up the morning show that DNVR is having, will have on Thursday, will feature Porrick Smith as well to talk about the summer and the state of the team now that we're halfway through the season. So I would encourage you to go listen to that. I've spoken to Porrick a few times in the last couple of weeks, but I don't know, we're podcasting not knowing if Porrick's going to break some news or say something a little bit more or add to the narrative around some of these. But so, Mark, let's start with the two loan options. I've written an article on it. I'm definitely leaning, I would be surprised if Rafael Navajo was not back with the club. I think at this point, the question is, what are the finances? And then how does that affect the rest of the club financially? I think it would be an absolute coup for the club to be able to get a transfer fee and then re-sign Navajo to a permanent deal that has him on TAM, something that Tom Bogert and I have reported on. But, you know, I think at this point, Mark, especially if, you know, there's a few more games to happen and a few more data points. If Navajo comes out, Mark, and gets a goal and they win against Austin, and he continues to be effective against St. Louis, against Montreal, I'm increasingly, Mark, you lean in towards closer to paying the $4.5 million, or at the very least, you're offering Palmeiras $3.5 million at this point, and you're having Navajo stay as a DP. And I think that's money well spent.
I'm with you. I basically think at this point, and this is pretty radical from where I was like a year ago or even 2 months ago, which is like, I think it's time to just pay the man. I mean, I think we can quibble over the amount, and we've been talking about that a couple podcasts ago. We kind of were like, oh, any higher than 2.5 is too much. And, you know, I think the contractual obligations for 4.5, right? And at this point, I'm like, you know, they'll try to renegotiate it and they'll probably end up at 3.5 or maybe 3 if they're really lucky. And I'm fine with that. But if they break the bank and pay 4.5, that's not the worst thing in the world either. It's more than I think he's necessarily worth. And I also feel one of the challenges in the history, I'm burned by the history of Rapids transfers. And one of the challenges I feel like with regard to like the history of Colorado Rapids transfers is we pay the money and we get the player and then it doesn't work out. And their best moment was right after you wrote the check, right? That's what happened with Stefan Aigner. That's what happened with Juan Ramirez. That's what happened with Shkelzen Gashi. That's what happened with Gabby Torres, right? Although Gabby Torres wasn't, I don't know that we paid a transfer fee for him. I don't think we did. But like, he had the most amazing Gold Cup. I think it was Gold Cup. And then we brought him from Panama to the Rapids, and he never did anything reasonably impressive again. And so
Labby Torres.
Yeah. So So that's the challenge, which is like, you know, you make the move and then you spend the money and they don't ever kind of perform at that level again, which is a recurring problem throughout sports in every kind of genre, which is like guys who are really famous for going big in their contract year. And so Rafael Navajo is kind of going through that right now. That being said, I think he plays for the badge. I think he knows that this is a good opportunity. I think he understands that MLS is a good level for him to be at. And I actually think, based on the misses and the fact that he's been pretty productive recently, that there's more potential there. That this is a guy who could be a regular 15 goal scorer for the Colorado Rapids. He defends on the front foot as a striker pretty well. He contributes when he's not trying to score, which we cannot say about all forwards in Colorado Rapids history. Some guys are just like, I want the ball and then I want to score. Other people will contribute with the ball. Like, I think one of the things that we've talked about is the chemistry that he's created over the last couple of games with Kevin Cabral, where they've both been willing to set up the other guy. And that kind of carries across the roster, where Navajo is willing to let somebody else, you know, Cole Bassett or
Omir Fernandez.
Yeah, Omir Fernandez. Like they're willing to be a unit, to play as four guys who are thinking like, he has the best chance, let me get him the ball. So I won't hesitate to say it. I guess I'm a convert. I'm a Rafael Navajo convert.
All right. I'm going to give you not a hot take, Mark, but here's a question that I thought of that I'll ask you. I'll answer first to give you time to think about it. If I had a choice right now between picking up the option, pay the $4.5 million, you know, on the 30th, and then keep Navajo at or above the number that he's at right now, so he's staying a DP. So you pay the transfer fee, and then there's no getting him down to a salary that is tamable. If I had a choice between that and not picking up the option at all, as in Navajo's final day with the Colorado Rapids is June 29th at LAFC. Yeah. If I have a choice between those, I'm choosing to pay the check at this point. We've seen this club take so many big swings and misses on foreign players who come in with an option to buy and you're not sure about things, or they end up whittling down and renegotiating based on the potential of what the player could be, based on what they've seen in training and what they project out that player could become actually in games. Navajo has given us proof of concept in ways that certainly in the last 5 years, but certainly since the Rapids Way article came out, Navajo has done more with his loan period with an option to buy than any other loan players with an option to buy have done. He did way more than Max. He doesn't have any red flags like Lucas Estimate does or anything. He's done plenty of stuff, not just in training, but transition to that on the field in a way that Marco Ilicha did not as well. You have a known quantity in Rafael Navajo and a known good, not great quantity at this point. There are so many other MLS teams, Mark, that are going to pay more than that between the winter window and this summer window will pay more than $4.5 million for a striker that will not get you 15 goal contributions this year. And I absolutely think Rafael Navajo can get 15. I'll say 15 goals. He's already at 9 goals. I'll say he can get absolutely 15 in league play this year. So that's
I'm mostly thinking about whether he's going to get 15 next year too, because like that's what the big money is being paid for.
Yeah. But so Mark, do you agree? If you have a choice between just pay the option to buy or no Navajo, we're both writing that check, yeah?
Yep, writing that check.
Okay, and the other thing that I'll say about that as well, Mark, you know, Jared Geisler from the C38 podcast has this mantra that I increasingly agree with, that this was the rebuilding year, and really it's about how competitive the Rapids can be next year. You know, like seventh, win one playoff game, but ultimately lose in that round of three, but then aim to finish top four next year, I think is the long-term goal of this project in the Chris Armas era for the club. And so simply by having Navajo go and then having to bring in another striker, I think you'd be lucky to get a guy in at comparable value and quality from within the league. So then you're restarting that cycle of another international player coming in, maybe not knowing English, not knowing the city, having to get used to the travel, used to the altitude, used to all these other things and everything. And then to then this year, you know, finally be good where they're at. And the alternative, Mark, would be you bring in that player and he ends up being a bust like some of the other foreign acquisitions the team has had. And then we're looking at Darren Yapi up top or Kevin Cabral false nine. And then at that point, Mark, you and I would be wringing our hands to bring back Dom Baggi at 200K for the year because he'd be better than any of those options as well. So I think we've said enough about Navajo. Hopefully Pork doesn't say anything that's out of pocket compared to what we've said, Mark. Rabbi, really quick, I'll throw this to you. I mean, Lamine Diak's not coming back, Mark, right? Yeah, like he's a bust, yes?
I mean, bust is an interesting question because he didn't really play much. So the question is, like, what did we... Like, the idea of a loan is that you will take that player... I mean, traditionally, the Rapids haven't really been doing it this way for the past couple of years. But you take a guy who plays for a higher-level team and you let him get some run, mostly so that they can kind of evaluate whether he would fit back with their team. His club is Nantes, right?
Nantes, yes.
Nantes. That's how they pronounce it.
N-A-N-T-E-S. Alejandro Bedoya.
The French, I don't speak French, but I know that they were really pronounced. Maurice Chevalier. I don't think they pronounce the T in the T-E-S, so I think it's pronounced Nantes. But anyways, point is, they didn't really get to see what he can do with us. We didn't really get to see what he could do with us. We don't really, it's a little bit, I mean, I have asked the folks in the kind of Rapids media ecosystem, what have you seen of him at training or, you know, what do you think? And the answer is not a lot. Like, there's not a lot going on. Matt's shaking his head vigorously and kind of implying like he either hasn't been notable in training or he hasn't been good in training.
No,
go ahead, Matt.
It's not good, Mark, where I'm hesitant to blame this on the player or say that he's crap. Like somebody messed up in here, but I don't know what it is necessarily. You know, did the coaching staff get it wrong? Is this evaluation thing like for him to be at the valuation that he's at a club like Nantes, you know, top five league, France, albeit they did just avoid relegation. Like if he's good enough for that, if he's good enough for Nantes to pay a Turkish club $2.7 million or euros, I'd have to go back and look at that Lake Keep article from back in the winter, you know, like this cannot be as simple, Mark, as he showed up 2 weeks late to preseason and got Wally pipped by Oliver LaRoz. There has to be something else going on, something that the club can learn from this situation, or maybe just, you know, the kid just didn't work out in MLS. But so, you know, to your point, there are 9 games left, Mark, before the 9th game will be that July 20th against Real Salt Lake. And then the Rapids will not play again until August 1st after the loan with the option to buy expires. And that'll be in Leagues Cup at Portland Timbers for the first game of the group stage in the Leagues Cup. And so, yeah. I mean, go ahead.
The only downside, I mean, because it's like you could say, all right, it's a loan, nothing ventured, nothing gained. You know, he never played, so whatever. The only downside for the Rapids is that his 2024 contract was for $864,150. So your question is twofold there. One is, who could you have gotten to play? Who could you have paid that much money to play that position and potentially outplay another midfielder and contribute to the team? And the answer is a lot of people. That's the high amount for a guy who doesn't set foot on the field and only has, I think, a handful of minutes. The second part of that is whenever you're paying money over the individual player kind of budget charge cap, which is $683,750 this year, it's coming out of your GAM or your TAM. So the Rapids paid $180,000 in GAM or TAM to offset the cost of him. That's money that really could have been spent on lots of other players in lots of other situations. And, you know, if it's GAM, it's money that the league handed over to the team that they could have paid anybody for. So, or they could have used in a transfer fee internally in the league. You know, so that's kind of the big hit there. So I don't feel terrible about it. You're going to make those mistakes. You're going to make expensive mistakes. The most expensive mistake that you can make is a dud DP. And so I guess for those of you who are listening to the podcast, this is the most damning by the most faint praise in the history of me doing the podcast. Hey, at least Lamine Diak wasn't a DP. You know what I mean? Like that's all I can say about the guy. But good riddance. He should go back. He should live and be well. He should be successful. He should go on to non and figure his career out, or they should loan him out to a second division team in France and maybe let him play and see if he can't, you know, kind of like recover his career. Because if it's not that, then he's going to be, you know, released effectively and he'll be in the nether regions of world soccer from here on out.
Yeah, so to your point, Mark, I think the interesting question is, as soon as Lamine comes off the book, so then roster spot opens up, international slot opens up, TAM money opens up, is then what do we do with that space as well? I think there'll be enough data points between now and the Rapids having to make that decision to figure out for Chris Armas to tinker with and figure out once, now that Connor Ronan's healthy, is it Ronan and Bassett with Ronan in the Oliver Larraz role? Does Ollie grow and maybe improve off of what was a bad end to, you know, the last couple of games for him as well, or do they go get another D mid and another number six style player? Mark, I think the other position that I'd like to see them go off is go for a winger who adds another skill set that you have maybe right now. That kind of be coupled with, you know, now that summer buyout option comes available, do you buy out Kevin Cabral? I think I'd be shocked if that happens. Of all these things that we're talking about, Mark, the only thing that'll be I'd be more shocked if the Rapids picked up Lamine Diak, if he does not play more than like three of these remaining nine games, then I would be Cabral being bought out. So I think that, you get another number six option. You know, who is the, when the scouting team generated that report of, you know, 10 possible targets, of which Lamine Diak was on as well, who's the next one that they think that they could get and maybe put in a better situation than Diak was in, or go look at the winger options. So I'd love another option on the left that's a little bit more possession, cut inside, you know, a foil to Kevin Cabral. Mark, I think we're both now on Jonathan Lewis. I like enough of what I've seen from Calvin Harris and from Omer Fernandez on the right that I want to see that experiment continue, certainly, but that's what I would do at that spot. Mark, any other positions that you really like that you'd want to see the Rapids sign? You know, this is really, it was very obvious last year what the Rapids needed to go get, and they got those three players, not that any more than one of them and possibly Navajo worked out. But, you know, I don't see a lot of other gaps other than maybe those two positions. I feel good about overall, at least the defensive options, not necessarily the structure. I mean, we both have qualms about the goalkeeper position and Zach Steffen, Mark, but I think we'd both be shocked if the Rapids went out and got another goalkeeper at this point.
Yeah, no, it's been a goalkeeper carousel for the Rapids for the last season, and I think it's going to stop, and they're just going to let Zach Steffen play out this season and hopefully figure out, you know, what he needs to do in the offseason to get right for the next year.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm with you. Basically, Matt has all the brilliant things to say. I'm just your faithful sidekick this week, which is to say, I think the winger idea is a really good one. You know, trying to find somebody who can be like Kevin Cabral or be like Jonathan Lewis or be like Omir Fernandez on the wing. You know, I would like a Stefan Aigner, Johan Blomberg type option on the wing, which is to say, a guy who is not fast, but can bend in the ball like there's nobody's business, you know, like that. Those players are pretty valuable. The other possibility, which is kind of the guy that I wanted Omir Fernandez to be, but he didn't turn out to be that guy, is the saucy dribbly guy who just breaks your ankles from the corner, who takes it down the goal line and causes problems. I used to call that a Mexican League's goal, because back in the day, like, Liga MX had these guys who just had this magical ability to tightrope around the end line in just wonderful ways. This is a Vicente Sanchez guy, like a guy with techers down the line. That guy you don't see as much of that in MLS these days. There's some guys, you know, definitely some players who would fit that mold, but the modern MLS is really, you know, the wingers tend to have a lot of pace and the ability to kind of cross or play in a ball really, really well. And they're a little bit foxy in the box, but the guy who's just absolutely like a medium paced ankle breaker is less common in the league. So
Yunus Nomley,
like,
Mark. You want the Rapids to bring back Yunus Nomley. I'm kidding.
I mean a Yunus Nomley who is more
betterer.
Effective, yes. I'd be fine with a Yunus Nomley that actually works and stays healthy and puts in a really good shift for 90 minutes.
Last thing we'll talk about on transfers, Mark, and then we'll actually get to the Diego Rubio revenge tour, is possible outgoings. I think the two that we would be highlighting, Mark, that you'd be looking at, there could be some shuffle towards the bottom of the roster, some inner MLS trades that I don't think are going to break the bank necessarily. Every time a fan brings up, Mark, that, you know, Jonathan Lewis is not starting and injured and why haven't the Rapids gotten rid of him? And my usual response is because no one in MLS would pay more than $200K in GAM for him at this point, and that's just not worth it. So, but I think the two interesting ones, Mark, are maybe Cole Bassett and Moise Bombito. I think for there to be a real lot of churn, not just scouts looking at them, but actually potentially looking at making an offer or actually calling the Rapids and submitting, you know, a financially relevant compensation offer would be what they do in these summer windows. I think certainly Cole's reestablished his floor in MLS. I get the sense, Mark, that Cole really clears. He's really happy to be back in Colorado. He's really happy that that the team's doing better and that he's part of that. And I don't know that if he were to leave this summer, unless it was for the absolute best opportunity, we'd have to be looking at a much softer landing than what he had at Feyenoord, which was a really soft landing relative to that opportunity he had in Portugal. I can't remember the name of the club that was. But so you'd have to be looking at that. And I think you'd have to be looking at a financial package that the Rapids couldn't say no to. So this wouldn't be alone with an option to buy. This had to be a transfer, and we're looking at, like, I'm just spitballing here, like $5 million, like, okay, Cole Bassett can go to Belgium for me, And so I think Cole sees that even if he continues to do well this summer and he does something, he makes the Olympic team and everything, that there's that just being back with the Rapids for a year and a half and then having one good half season, 3 month period isn't him finishing the business in terms of him and MLS and in terms of the club's status within MLS. So I'm hesitant to say. I think he wants to reestablish his ceiling and he wants to do something with the club that he hasn't done before, i.e. win a playoff game, before he even thinks about that. So I don't think Cole leaves unless it's an absolute crazy offer. I don't see that happening unless Cole absolutely balls out in France at the Olympics, and he was an unused sub against Japan. So I think he's a guy off the bench option, which would be great, which would be an improvement on where Cole's been from a national team standpoint. That doesn't get you to Genk calling up and saying, hey, we want you to be our starting, you know, eight mixer guy in a 4-3-3, and we'll pay $5 million for him like they did for Tejan Buchanan. And then the other one, Mark, would be Moise Bombito, who started both of the games for Jesse Marsh in this window for Canada. And I think very likely Mark will get at least two starts or certainly two appearances in the group stage for Canada. And if you couple that, Mark, with him continuing to play well for the Rapids, maybe an all-star game appearance as well. You know, I saw that he's in the top five in terms of the voting at the center back position for there. Then I think things become a little bit more interesting, Mark, especially given he's still on that rookie deal and, you know, what, making 100K.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't see either of those guys leaving this year. I think the guy that I have said over and over again is most likely to leave is Jonathan Lewis, because he's just not playing. You know, up till this point this season, Jonathan Lewis has 120 minutes played this season, 0 goals, 0 assists, 0.3 expected goals, 0.2 expected assists. That's pretty low. And he's also on a contract. It's not really, his contract isn't the kind of like thing that broke the camel's back. He's only making only $435,000. All of us listening to the podcast are like, I don't make $435,000. Someone is in the oil acquisition business or is works for a hedge fund and is like, $435,000, it's nothing. But no, That's my only take. I can also see a world where Calvin Harris maybe gets kind of sold because of his potential, since he's still a young player. But I think that the Rapids like him enough that they kind of want to hang on to him.
Agreed.
So I see that, like, you're right. There's not a whole lot of players with a lot of like upside, and that they're currently below their kind of target value. And the ones that we've mentioned, we've already mentioned. So I think you've nailed it with Moise Bombito, though, that like, he's not ready to go. Like, people are excited about him, but he's not ready to go. That being said, we didn't really talk about it. You know who Canada played on Sunday, Matt?
France.
They took on France. Moise Bombito started at center back, played all 90 minutes, and Kylian Mbappe subbed on in the 71st or 73rd minute or something like that. And I hope you get to be in the mix zone at some point at the end of the summer and just, you know, drop your jaw, let a little drool dribble out the right side, turn to Moise Bombito and be like, what was it like to play against Kylian Mbappe? You know, just and full blown go starry eyed, you know, noob in the press zone. That would be fine by me. Speaking of starry eyed noobs in the press zone, the editor for the local Pittsburgh soccer website emailed me yesterday or texted me yesterday and said, hey, I'm submitting credentials for the Liverpool game. Do you want me to add your name? And I was like, yeah, I do. So I've never seen a Premier League, an English Premier League team play ever in my life. So that would be my first. It wasn't really kind of what I was planning, but that might be what I do. I mean, the funny thing is that my barber, I took the kids to get their haircut today, and the barber, I said, hey, I might be going to the Liverpool game. He's like, you know, you could pay to go to that. It's not expensive. It's only $40 a seat. But I'm also thinking to myself, like, I'm not a Liverpool fan. I wouldn't pay $40 to go see Liverpool. But for free, I will absolutely go see Liverpool.
Yeah, last thing that I'll say on Moise and generally, Mark, since you brought up Calvin Harris as well, like the moves that the Rapids were making are not just necessarily making a profit based on the current valuation of the player or necessarily their potentials. I think the players have to consider, obviously, there'd be a financial component. You know, could Moise, you know, if Moise was out of contract this summer, would he absolutely be getting offers in Europe? Absolutely. Would they be more than the 110K that he's making right now for the Rapids? Absolutely. But you also have to look at long term, where's a really good option for you in terms of a landing spot that's going to help you progress in your career. It's not necessarily just getting to Europe as quickly as possible, but it's getting to the right position for you family-wise, on the field, off the field, financially, and from a competitive standpoint. And there's a lot of players, Mark, in that locker room that can talk about how the grass is not always greener on the other side when you absolutely crush an MLS, make a move maybe 6 months early, or go for the move that's in front of you rather than waiting for the right opportunity and not work out. Sam Vines, Georgi Mihailovic, Cole Bassett. Can we say Zach Steffen at this point as well, Mark? I mean, yeah, you know, he got to be around a lot of really cool guys in Manchester. He got to make a whole lot of money, obviously. He was on teams that won trophies. He didn't win any of those trophies. Like, technically, is Zach Steffen a Premier League champion? Yeah, when you're an unused sub or the third goalkeeper, like, do you really get to take credit for that? So I have to think that there's a lot of players right there that would give good advice and sound advice to where if Moise or Cole were to leave this summer, it would have to be the right opportunity and the Rapids would have to be made whole financially. And so for those reasons, given how good it is right now for them, it absolutely benefits both of them to be with the club through the end of the year and then probably in the next year as well. And then what happens after that as we go into a World Cup cycle, who knows with where both of those guys are with the national team. If they continue to crush it this year and then they're great on a great Rapids team, do I see them move potentially 6 months or maybe do like a pre-contract for that summer after the World Cup? Absolutely. But, you know, it's a good situation right now. Don't screw up a good situation because that kind of happened to Sam Vines, and maybe it happened to Georgi Mihailovic, and maybe it happened to Cole Bassett too. Mark, tell our listeners how they can support Holding the High Line to, you know, help support independent coverage of Ye Here Colorado Rapids and ultimately get scammed by the KSC-funded PSYOP that is Holding the High Line.
We are not a scam in any way, shape, or form. We have, because we run through Substack, and Substack collects your credit card information. I don't know your credit card number, and I never will. And I'm a rabbi, so even if I did know your credit card number, I would not charge my vacation to Aruba on it, because you can trust me, because I have a career and a family and kids and a dog and a mortgage, and I'm not going to screw that all up for 6 years in prison by committing fraud. I don't know if this is an ad read anymore or just a political and legal disclaimer that I'm a morally responsible adult. Anyways, if you like what we do, if you like what you're hearing, you can just really simply help us out by clicking like and subscribe, leaving reviews for our Apple iTunes or on our Spotify. Give us all the clicks and all the stars and all the likes and all the friends and all the things, and that'll be good for us. Also, friend us on Facebook and like us on Facebook. That helps us out. And additionally, we have an X channel or an X account that we'd love you to subscribe to. Our Substack is where you can get bonus content. That's my written material, Matt's occasional written material, additional audio resources, and for subscribing Highliners who sign up for the year, you can get a t-shirt. We've got two athletic t-shirts, one in camo gray, one in black. We have pretty much all sizes still available, although not necessarily in all colors. So if you become a subscribing Highliner by the end of the 2024 year, you will get a t-shirt. Matt, we're not really selling t-shirts on the side anymore because they weren't a big draw, and that's okay. But if you'd like to become a paid Highliner by subscribing at the paid level, go to our Substack, click subscribe, then click pay, and for $5 a month or $48 a year, you can be a paid Highliner. For $96 a year, you can be a Gallery of Honor supporter, which means you really, really believe in what we do, and we really, really appreciate you. And that is how you can support Holding the High Line. We really appreciate you because you keep us going. You buy the gas that gets Matt out to training. You buy the beer that I hold in my hand while I do the podcast, and you make it all worthwhile. We appreciate the support that you give to us. Back to you, Matt.
Listeners, this coming Saturday, June 15th, the Colorado Rapids will be losing to Diego Rubio and Austin FC. Austin FC currently sitting sixth in the Western Conference. They have 23 points off of 17 games played, a near even record of 6-6-5, and a goal difference of -4. On the road this season, away from Q2 Stadium, they are 1-4-3. They were idle this weekend, just like the Rapids international play. Before that, they had a double game week that was about as bad as the Rapids. They lost 2-0 at home to Portland and then got absolutely spanked by Real Salt Lake 5-1. So by the transitive property, the Rapids should be better than them, maybe. Rapids sitting in eighth in the Western Conference, 22 points off of 17 games played. 6-7-4 is their record, a goal difference of -2. And at the Richard this season, the PIDs are 3-2-2. Let's look at Austin, Mark, who have very much still a Central, a South American flair to them. Julio Cascante is still their main center back alongside Vesanainen. There are two umlauts in that, so I barely know what to do with Maxu's last name, Mark, so I'm not even going to try to do that one. Brad Stuver, who I think is certainly a contender for goalkeeper of the year regularly, and Mark, I did my MLS All-Star ballot, and I voted for Matt Freeze, the Iceman from NYCFC, and I had a few Austin fans saying that I should have gone for Stuver, and there is certainly an argument behind that. Bureau has taken over at the left back position on the other side from John Gallagher. He's a new player who's done some good stuff from a overlapping standpoint. A increasingly old Alexander Ring is still in the midfield, Mark, next to Valencia, doing a lot of really good metronomy stuff, but increasingly slower and less productive. Of course, when we get to the Austin attack, we are not talking very much about wingers because Rigoni is an absolute bust for them. But of course, they have Sebastian Triussi, who's one of the best number 10s in Major League Soccer. And up top this season, for the most part, in a 4-2-3-1, has been former Colorado Rapid Diego Rubio. For those of you wondering, Jossie Zardes has very much been relegated to the bench this season. Diego has 3 goals and no assists in almost 1,200 minutes played. Meanwhile, Jossie Zardes, 2 assists, no goals in 461 minutes played. Off the top of my head, Mark, I think it's pretty darn close. I think Zardes has barely played more minutes than Darren Yapi at this point this season. So that is where we are in terms of those two players. Mark, what do we see in Austin? This is a team that's bad on the road. This is a team that arguably is not great in 3 of their 4 years now in MLS. I don't know how Josh Wolf still has this job, to be honest. Mark, if you were a playoff team, you look at a team that you're competing with for playoff seeding, and they are a bad road team, and they just lost some road games. You should beat them at home.
Agreed. I think Austin absolutely cratered last year after a wonderful year two seasons ago, and finished nearly at the bottom of the Western Conference. And I think that this year, I think you said it really well by pointing out that Alexander Ring is getting progressively slower. He's covering less ground and he's becoming less accurate overall as a defensive midfielder, which means that he's less valuable. But I think I want to focus my attention on Sebastian Driussi, who you kind of identified as one of the top attacking players in the Western Conference. That was true, I think, also 2 years ago when they were good. Last year, he was important, but he couldn't raise the team. This year, my sense of him, at least statistically and by watching a few Austin games, is something wrong there. Like, he's just not all there. He has 5 goals and 1 assist, which is fine, but not impressive. I mean, there are a lot of players on the Rapids who have at least as many goal contributing kind of moves in their season. If you look at his FB ref percentiles, which compares him to other players in Major League Soccer at the same position, he's in the 74th percentile on non-penalty goals, which means he's kind of an above average attacking midfielder. 67th on shots total. Okay. 44th on assists. Yikes. You're not really contributing. His non-penalty expected goals plus expected assists is in the 61st percentile, meaning in terms of goal contributions, Matt, for an attacking midfielder with the number of minutes he has, he's roughly average. You know, he's kind of turned into a pumpkin. He's just a guy at this point. Now, Attacking midfielders are expensive players and they're good players, and finding a really valuable one is hard. But mathematically speaking, if you had to pick between Sebastian Driussi, a high-flying South American transfer that you paid a bunch of money for, and Cole Bassett, a homegrown from Colorado who went on loan to Europe and didn't really do much and then came back home trying to figure it out, you're going to take Cole Bassett every single time. And additionally, because Bassett is kind of a player who can play at the 10 or the 8 or the 6. Driussi is not going to give you defensive cover the way that Cole Bassett does. And statistically speaking, just to finish off the thought on Driussi, 28th percentile in tackles, 27th percentile in interceptions, 19th percentile in blocks. The dude don't defend. So that is a big problem for Austin. It means that the Rapids know that they can kind of go on the counter, get in immediately behind the attacking mid, and just have to deal with Alexander Ring in the back line. And if you look at the numbers on their back line, Austin isn't stopping a whole lot. So this is a game where the Rapids can and should win the game. This is a game where Austin are kind of like, as you noted in their 5-1 thumping by RSL, they are really kind of against it. Of course, everyone's had a rest. That last week was a double game week for everybody in the league. So maybe they were tired. Driussi didn't play in that game, the second game, the RSL game. But it's a really good question of like, is Austin capable? Are they kind of slumping a little bit? Are they capable of better? Or have we kind of seen all their tricks and they're really moving in the wrong direction as a club? I'm going to go with the latter. I think the Rapids win this game 3-1, let's say. I don't think it's ever going to be in doubt. They will control this one from the beginning. It should be a lot of fun. Meanwhile, in Los Angeles, the rabbi will be with his dad and one of his kids at the LA Galaxy game at the Diggity. They're playing SKC. Matt asked me earlier what I would. I asked Matt, what should I wear? And Matt was like, oh, you should rep the Rapids. And I was like, I'm going to be that guy. I'm going to be the guy who's not supporting either team. So I thought maybe a hat, but not a kit. So,
well, I mean, if you rock the yarmulke then, Mark, then like you're talking wearing a yarmulke and a Rapids shirt at an MLS game, like somebody is going to recognize you or put 2 and 2 together and realize 2 plus 2 equals rabbi.
You think I'm that famous? I don't know. I do have a Rapids kit that literally says rabbi on the back. So it's possible that would identify me, but yeah. No, I don't know that I'm that famous. I appreciate your faith in me, though.
I could tag a bunch of LA Galaxy people who would absolutely want to show you where the good pupusas are at, Mark. If you want to, our pupusas are kosher, yeah?
As long as they're just cheese, yeah, for sure.
Okay, they stuff lots of things in pupusas. It does not have to be, I'm forgetting the Spanish word for pork at this point, or the term they have for it, not just jamón, but in any case,
cochinita pibil. Cochinita pibil, that's the good stuff.
Or you could do some...
He said, not having had it in 25 years.
Yeah. Mark, we have to talk about Diego Rubio, right? Who I don't understand I've not really understood the transfer policy of Austin FC basically in their entire time in MLS, Mark. First of all, we can say that, Mark, we can say that other than Driussi, every single DP they've had has been a bust. So that's another thing that Claudio Reyna has done really terribly to make life annoying for people in American soccer. But, you know, I think also, you know, Rubio's listed here on American Soccer Analysis as a striker. He's been mostly playing up top or the more front forward guy compared to Sebastian Driussi. And so that's the right move because Driussi is the better chance creator and Rubio does a lot of really good stuff defensively, but it's not his natural best position. Like it was being the underneath guy for Kai Kamara in the 4-2-3-1, or it was being the guy who cuts inside or at the top of the midfield in a 4-3-3 where you had more defensive or other pressy style players around him. Ironically, Mark, I think I think Rubio would be better set up. Rubio's skill set is better suited to Georgi Mihailovic's role on the Rapids than his current role with Austin FC. So if we look at the numbers right here, Mark, and maybe I was looking at something wrong. MLSsoccer.com had him at 1198 minutes played, whereas American Soccer Analysis has him at at 1,294. But in any case, Mark, Diego Rubio has a negative goals added, according to American Soccer Analysis.
Yikes.
He's at minus 1.44. Now, I should say, Mark, that is him as a striker. So this is not Diego Rubio, the central attacking midfielder. This is Diego Rubio, where his finishing and his shooting is being compared or being averaged out with a data set or a curve that is being wrecked by Chicho Arango, Dennis Bouanga, Lionel Messi, Luis Suarez, Christian Benteke. So I'd love to see the distribution, Mark, of like the bell curve of where all of these players are at, because I think what we previously thought of, you know, negative 1.44, Mark, 3-4 years ago was worse than Dom Baji. You know, are we secretly now skewed to where it's almost like it's a reverse bell curve where there's a bunch of elite strikers that are absolutely crushing it, and then basically everybody else is negative as a result of that? That's an interesting question I'd have for Ben and the guys over at ASA. But in any case, Mark, here's his goals added. So he's negative 1.44 overall, and almost the biggest chunk of that is he has a negative receiving. So that's how you're receiving the pass and then what you're doing with it. And then it's his dribbling and his shooting. Now, he is on a bad team, Mark, on a bad team that has bad wingers like Rigoni and like an aging, I think Ethan Finley is still hanging around. Or no, you're wagging your hand, Mark.
Rigoni got bought out at the end of May. Austin exercised their buyout. That was, remember when I was talking before about like, if you're going to make a mistake on Lamine Diak, at least he's only, you know, you're only paying him $862,000 for a year. Rigoni was making $2 million a year, was a DP player, and they had to exercise their buyout. Guess where he's playing now?
His native country in South America.
In the park, nowhere. He's been signed by nobody. Now, granted, it's only been like 3 weeks, but like, you know, if you look on his FB ref to see, you know, where he was transferred to, it says MLS pool. I wonder where is the MLS pool? Is it on a beach in South Florida? Is it a Olympic size pool? Is it one of those kidney shaped pools? Is it more of a kiddie pool? Like, what size pool are we talking about when we talk about
so,
an MLS pool?
Mark, this is MLS being a single entity. And so what's actually happened here is Austin has already agreed to pay out the rest of his salary, but
sure,
on the books from an MLS standpoint, he's technically an MLS player till the end of the year until he gets picked up by someone else.
Of course.
The press release where Motherwell said that they had signed Sam Nicholson to a new 2-year deal, Mark, the way that they described it, they said after a successful loan stint from Colorado Rapids. And so what actually happened there, I think, I haven't confirmed this with somebody from either club, but so the Rapids waived Sam Nicholson. Nicholson was in this nebulous void that is the MLS pool that Rigoni is now in purgatory for. And so on paper, then Nicholson was a part of MLS, but then he got picked up by Motherwell on loan in that it was paying out for the rest of his time on the Rapids because he was waived and there was probably some dead cap space due to a clause in the contract for that. And then now there was a transfer, probably a free transfer, if I'm guessing, in the summer, upon which Sam Nicholson is now no longer a part of the MLS pool. Nicholson was listed as a Rapids player, Mark, when the MLSPA did their salary numbers. So was Sydney Tavares, who was also probably in the MLS pool. Neither of them will be in the pool come this fall when we get the updated numbers from the MLSPA. I would assume if Rigoni is not signed to a new team, he will as well, but that would then become void as of December 31st, 2024. Okay.
That was more information than we ever really needed, but I love it, Matt. This is the nerdy deep dive that you get from holding the high line.
Exactly. So, Mark, looking at the biggest thing that Diego Rubio is not doing well compared to players in the same position is his receiving is poor, his shooting is slightly below average, and his dribbling is slightly below average. Unsurprisingly, his fouling is above average. So what does that mean, Mark? That probably means that Rubio's being put in a tough spot to try and create something for himself, and then he's trying stuff, and it's just not working. Again, from a position that doesn't work for him, for a team that overall is bad, that doesn't have winger threats, where the entire team is simply trying to stop Sebastian Driussi. So, Mark, last year when we talked about Minnesota United, what was the big thing that we talked about with Minnesota's attack and everything that they were doing? Stop the ball getting from Reynoso, and then don't leave Robin Lud or Timo Pukki wide open. For the most part, opposing teams, especially when they're at home against Austin FC, are stymieing Sebastian Driussi. The ball eventually gets to Diego Rubio in not a great position, and Rubio has to try and make something out of nothing, and he's not doing that very well. He's got 3 goals and 0 assists. That being said, Mark, you know, you gave your prediction. You have a Rapids win. I can't make heads or tails in this game, Mark. I haven't been able to get out to training this week, so I don't know. We're going to find out how both of these teams responded to where they are in the table and how their week, their double game week that was two losses for both teams, how they responded in this game on Saturday. And so that is going to inform how I feel about the team going forward. I don't feel confident enough to make a prediction one way or another. You could tell me that, like, you could say any scoreline, Mark, between a 2-2 Rapids win and a 2-2 Austin win and anything in between, and I would believe that being possible. I could see Diego Rubio having the best game that he's had for Austin FC and scoring the game winner, and they end up winning the game. I could see the Rapids absolutely responding, just like how they had previously, having 2 weeks off to think about it, coming out, being much more stout defensively, doing all the other good things that they're doing, and seeing Cole Bassett, Rafael Navajo, and Georgie Mihailovic absolutely cook, and the Rapids score multiple goals, and they win the game. I'm not sure. I can't make a prediction, but Rabbi, I'm really excited to talk to Diego Rubio after the game on Saturday and just get his thoughts, like as I have for a number of people associated with the club, just coming back and documenting their emotions and returning to Colorado and what it means to them and how they are in their new space and how they've made peace with their current circumstances, given the way that the club chose to move on from them. So I will be excited for that. And in that regard, go Diego, go. Mark, anything else? Do we want to briefly touch on St. Louis, or should we get out of here?
No, we're good. We'll get to St. Louis when we get to St. Louis.
Listeners, you can follow us individually on the Twitter machine at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPollard, and at @Rapids96Podcast. Send us your questions on using the hashtag AskHCHL on Twitter or on Facebook, because hashtags work on Facebook. I forgot that. And you can email us at Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. Your friends that are getting super into Copa America are Chilean and like Diego Rubio and are super interested in seeing how Chile will do in Copa America this summer. Maybe are MLS curious or Rapids curious. Send them this podcast and see if they want to watch some MLS during the down days of the Copa America in between matches and once they get into the knockout stage. Listeners, we will see you next
time. Peace. I'm not criticizing. I'm just like, you know, you should have pimped this last week, homie. Should have pimped it last week. No.
Fair.
All right.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.